You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, 17 banners, way up in the rafters, J. King, John Corrales, and Sam Jam Packard. Focus like Danny at the deadline, global, but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time, I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way.
Hey there, welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast, and I want to thank you for making us part of your regular routine. We're here for you every week through the offseason, the regular season, bearing down on us just a few weeks away. It's coming, baby. It's coming. I'm John Corrales. I cover the team for Mass Live. I am the only one of the Rain and Jays here for you today to walk you through this Monday podcast. Going to start off by talking a little bit about Team USA. We had a game over the weekend, Saturday. The U.S. beat Greece 69-53. I'll talk about that. I was at the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies in Springfield. That was a lot of fun. I'll talk a little bit about that, what I saw there. And then at the end, just a couple of odds and ends from an event that the Celtics had at BU, something over there, but a couple of things that came out of that, and I'll talk about that. So let's start with the USA game, which I loved because Marcus Smart was pure Marcus Smart. If you didn't see the game, what you missed was a tight first quarter where the Americans were up 19-17, but that two-point lead was a little disappointing because Giannis Antetokounmpo sat for the last few minutes, and they had a six-point lead, and they just kind of let it slip, and they didn't put any room between them and Greece. And I thought, oh, boy, here we go. Giannis is going to come in, and he's going to do what he does, and it's just going to be a very difficult game because he came out smoking hot. Marcus Smart checked in the second quarter, and he just stifled Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, Giannis didn't score in the second quarter with Marcus Smart guarding him. And I will say, and I got to ask this on Twitter, Greg Popovich kind of agreed with this sentiment. The question was, do you think Marcus Smart can do this in an NBA game for as much as he did, or were the FIBA rules in play here? And there were definitely FIBA rules that were in play because you could stay in the lane and guys can help, and I don't want to make it seem like it was just Marcus Smart doing only Marcus Smart things. He did a lot of Marcus Smart things and really was the catalyst, the defensive catalyst. But the rest of Team USA, they definitely swarmed. They definitely had a very big impact on this game. So Marcus Smart was the headliner, and in 17 minutes, he did a fantastic job defensively on Giannis Antetokounmpo. But at the same time, there were guys right behind him making it clear that they didn't respect the Greek shooters, and that was for good reason. Greece shot 7 of 27 from 3. They just kind of let everybody bomb away. But just focusing on Marcus Smart for a second here, Marcus Smart, what made him so great in this game was the knowledge of how to play Giannis. He knew he didn't respect Giannis's shot at all. Okay, now Giannis did make a three. He was 1 of 2 from three. And that first one, I mean, that was like within the first couple minutes of the game. Marcus Smart was able to help off of Giannis enough where he disrupted a lot of what was going on down low when Giannis was out on the perimeter. He was able to get back enough, you know, fast enough, But it was also, once Giannis tried to go through the middle of the lane and try to relocate, Marcus Smart decided to do things like double the ball hard to try to force a turnover and disrupt the Greek offense. And then when Giannis tried to post them up, there's a great sequence where he was just spinning around to front Giannis, so they didn't make any sort of entry pass easy. And Marcus Smart can get up, but even if you throw a high arcing pass, it's either A, going to get deflected on the way in, or it's going to be so high and looping and slow that it's going to allow the rest of the defense to swarm around Giannis. So he did a masterful job, Marcus Smart did, on Giannis Antetokounmpo. It was really, really great to see. And I think also part of this is that you see Marcus Smart, he didn't play as much against like Turkey. He completely missed the game against Japan because he had a thigh or some kind of quad thigh bruise, something. He's fine. Obviously, he's fine. But Greg Popovich is going to go with whatever lineup works in that situation. This time, it was very low Mason Plumlee, 4 minutes for him. No Brook Lopez. Miles Turner played 14 minutes. So not much on the bigs, going small a lot. Harrison Barnes played 27 minutes almost. Jaylen Brown played 28 minutes almost after Jaylen Brown was kind of minimized against Turkey. So going small in those situations was beneficial to the Americans, and Greg Popovich decided to go that way. That's the beauty of having a team that goes 12 deep, to have this everybody available. Now, against a team like Serbia, if they do play a team like Serbia, maybe you'll go big. And maybe, you know, we saw Jokic get booted from a game where he just got frustrated. That's kind of what he does. I mean, you saw him get ejected from games in Denver. He getting texts like crazy because he can't control his emotions. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got into a game against Serbia and all of a sudden it just became Mason Plumlee just hacking the shit out of Jokic and Brook Lopez hacking the shit out of Jokic and try to frustrate him and get him out of his game. I mean, Jokic can take himself out of games much faster than opposing defenses can sometimes. So I wouldn't be surprised if that becomes part of the game plan. I mentioned Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown had a nice game. He played 28 minutes. He scored 8 points. Still can't hit his free throws, 2 of 4 from the line, but he was the leading rebounder for Team USA with 9. Only a couple of fouls in that whole thing. No turnovers and assists. Just really a block shot for Jaylen. Overall, a very nice effort for him. And what was, I think, beneficial from a Celtics perspective there, as we've spoken about, they've used Jaylen Brown as a power forward. We saw a lot of that in this game as well. And he has been able to go up against bigger guys, hold his own, really is something. If we're looking for something that's translatable, while there's not much translatable in FIBA to the to the NBA, I'm going to say it's not much, but there are enough rules changes where it's tough to make that direct comparison. But the direct comparison that you can make for Jaylen Brown is he's out there bodying bigger guys, holding his own. And what I like from him offensively, you're starting to see some semblance of an offense. It's starting to come together. That one-legged kind of Dirk fadeaway jumper in the middle of the lane is really money for him. In the post, if he spins baseline, he's got that little ability to clear out with the shoulder that's the one that's closest to the lane, whichever way he's spun. This time he did it with his right shoulder because he spun to the left baseline. But he kind of clears a little space with that shoulder, gets a little bump, gets the defender off him, gets the momentum going away from him. Maybe that can end up drawing a foul, but it should clear some space. Now, Jaylen actually missed the shot that I'm thinking of, but he missed a bunny. That's something that he should make, and he's got to finish better around the rim. But on the positive side, seeing Jaylen do those little things, you know, he hit some threes. Well, not in this game, actually, but he's hit some threes in prior games. Against Japan, he hit a bunch of threes. That's what I'm thinking of. But he has been hitting his threes. I think if he can just do a couple of simple things. Obviously, make the open three, drive hard against the closeout, know how to finish in those areas. Do you do that little jump, step back type thing in the lane? Okay, that's fine. You get some space there. Find a way to get all the way to the rim or drive and dish. You got to develop that part of your game. And then little work in the post. If you get a mismatch, get to work in the post. I think that's very effective. Kemba Walker was his usual self. 15 points, team high, 6 assists. Team high, that 15 points was a team high. I mean, just another Kemba Walker type game. Like, it was kind of like a ho-hum, like, oh, by the way, Kemba just kind of did what he did. I'll repeat myself once here by saying that Kemba is the guy that's probably the most comfortable in his role here. He's clearly the best player. Things clearly are better with him on the floor. And he's just the stuff that you see from him. He's the one guy that the stuff that you see from him, that's the stuff you're going to see in Boston. So very, very exciting to see that. Obviously, Jason Tatum didn't play. We're hopefully going to find out more about him and whether he's going to be able to play in this next game. The next game, you're listening to this on Monday. We'll record a show on Monday to talk about that game. So that'll be the Tuesday podcast. So start your day with us. Start your day with this. And then finish your day with the other podcast, or start your Tuesday with the other podcast. So I'm going to come back and we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. Reminder that there's the Locked On NFL side of things. I know a lot of you probably watch the Patriots and the Steelers. If you're Patriots or Steelers fans, there's a Locked On podcast for either of those, a Locked On podcast for either, whatever your favorite NFL team is. So go check that out. Obviously, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy for the NFL as well. Got your whole NFL experience covered. So find that wherever podcasts exist. Back with Hall of Fame talk right up next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
I had the distinct pleasure of being in Springfield for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Now, I know it wasn't the sexiest class, but for an old guy like me, I was very, very much enjoying myself, especially with Jack Sikma, who, when I was young, when I was in high school, way, way, way back when, in Rhode Island, Pawtucket, Rhode Island, Shea High School, when I was 6'3", and in, you know, when you are a freshman in high school and you're 6'3", in Rhode Island, you're a giant. If I was born in New York, they would have had me dribbling and I would have been a point guard, but in Rhode Island, I was a big guy, especially back then, so I had to learn post moves. That was my task, to learn post moves. So obviously, I studied Kevin McHale a lot. I also studied Jack Sikma, and that reverse pivot that he had, where the ball was way over his head, and he created space and made that shot impossible to block. And it was a simple move, but very, very effective, and effective enough to get him into the Hall of Fame. So I enjoyed myself there. There were four inductees that had connections to the Boston Celtics. Obviously, the two most obvious ones, Chuck Cooper, the first African-American drafted in the NBA in 1950. He was selected by the Boston Celtics. Famously, Walter Brown was told when he was selecting was making the selection, and I forget who it was, but you hear the story of, you realize he's black, right? And Walter Brown says, I don't care if he's polka-dotted. If he's going to help our team win, we're going to pick him. So they selected Chuck Cooper. He wasn't actually the first. He was the first one drafted, but he wasn't the first one to play because of some kind of scheduling. There was a scheduling glitch or whatever it was. But Chuck Cooper holds the distinction of being the first African-American drafted by an NBA team. So he is an absolute barrier breaker. The other big Celtics connection was Bill Fitch, who was the first coach Larry Bird had in the NBA, and they won a title in 1981. It was the first title of the Big Three era, so he has a very obvious connection to Boston. He holds a special place in Larry Bird's heart. Larry Bird calls him special, and Fitch's big thing was turning teams around. He joked in his pre-recorded speech, because he wasn't actually there, which is a shame because I really wanted to talk to him, but what he said was, I basically got the jobs that nobody else wanted, but he was very good and he was able to turn a lot of teams around. He turned around and brought the 1986 Houston Rockets to the NBA Finals and lost to Larry Bird and the 86 Celtics, one of the greatest, perhaps the greatest NBA team ever assembled. So that was a very nice honor there. A couple of other connections. Paul Westfall, who many know as a Suns great. As a Sun, he made like five, I believe, all NBA teams. Basically the last half of the 1970s, he was an all NBA guard for the Phoenix Suns. But he started out in Boston, cut his teeth in Boston, and won a championship in 1974 with Tommy Heinsohn. And I talked to Paul Westfall a little bit, and he, if you didn't see it on masslive.com, masslive.com/Celtics, go ahead and make sure you bookmark that and read all my stuff there. He had an interesting kind of, I was standing there, and the way it worked on Thursday was they introduce everybody, and everybody kind of gets up and says, hey, thanks, this is a nice honor, and blah, 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 and they say a few words, and then everybody moves up to this wing of the Hall of Fame. This new interactive wing is really, really cool. But everybody was kind of around, so I got my conversation with Jack Sigma, and then I was waiting to talk to Paul Westfall. And obviously I was going to talk to Westfall about some other stuff. Like I was going to talk to him about the 1976 finals, Game 5, the triple overtime game, which was viewed as like the greatest game ever played. That was something that I kind of wanted to talk to him about, but everybody was talking to him about that. But as I was waiting, he was kind of complaining a lot about, I shouldn't characterize it that way. He kind of worked in complaints about today's NBA in a lot of the answers that I was overhearing him talking to other people while I was waiting to get a few minutes with him. And, you know, he'd say certain things like, blah, 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 this happened, and I don't really like that. And, you know, I like this guy, and but I don't like how this works or whatever. So when I got to talking to him, I figured, hell, I'm just going to ask him about this. And that was my story, because I thought he had a pretty good point that because of the three, because of the over-reliance of the three, this wasn't like some sort of like foot stomping, things were better in my day. No, this was actually a good point that I don't know if it hurts or helps or whatever, but his point was because of the three and the heavy reliance on the three, every offense is basically the same. You run a spread pick and roll, you know, a high pick and roll with the slowest defender on the floor, and you get shooters everywhere, and you just try and beat the team that way. And that's kind of what everybody does. That's what we talk about. You run a high pick and roll. How many times last year we talk about why aren't we running high pick and rolls more with Kyrie and Al Horford? Like that was something that we were calling for all the time. That's kind of like the way people play now. And to Westfall's point, it's like, it's fine, but it takes away a lot of the artistry, the creativity, the different offenses from just that creation of a shot is not as difficult as it used to be. And because it used to be more difficult, you'd have to get more creative in your offense to create a shot. And you really have to get creative based on your personnel. So different teams ran different offenses, and you know, you'd have to really adjust. Nowadays, it's just you have your, you know, whatever your team, maybe you have to take your center off the floor and go small, and everybody's kind of sort of doing the same thing. So it's an interesting point. And one of the things he would like to see is a little less of that freedom of movement rule, which, okay, I mean, I'm not 100% sold on that either. People like to see scoring, and I think the defense in the NBA is getting a lot harder. It's a lot more difficult to play defense in the NBA. So we're seeing like the best defensive teams still giving up a lot more points than the best defensive teams used to. And that's just the function of the rules changes. I guess the point with Westfall is aesthetically, he just finds it not as pleasing as the other styles, the styles that it, and it's not that it's bad for the game. He made it a point to say he enjoys basketball. He watches it all the time. Just doesn't enjoy this aspect of it. So it's a great discussion, and I think it's a better discussion than, oh, I'm an old guy, and you know, things were better with me, and this sucks. He definitely wasn't playing a this sucks kind of card. The last guy with a Celtic tie was Carl Braun, who was a New York Knicks, an early New York Knicks legend, like 1940s and 50s. New York Knicks legend. He was a champion with the 1962 Boston Celtics in the last year of his career, backing up Bob Cousy. So those were the Celtics connections. Obviously, the highlight of the night, if you haven't seen it, Teresa Witherspoon's speech. That was an amazing speech. I mean, just from the heart, awesome speech. She was the absolute highlight of the night. If you haven't seen it, Google Teresa Witherspoon's Hall of Fame speech. You will not regret it. Okay, gonna take a break. Gonna come back. A couple of odds and ends, including, speaking of old teams, Jalen, his conversation with Danny Ainge, and a new hire for the Celtics in the front office.
You are Locked On Celtics, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
While I was at the Hall of Fame, Danny Ainge was having a conversation with Shira Springer of WBUR at City Space at Boston University. Among the things that they discussed was the new hire in their front office, Allison Feaster, former WNBA star. She was at Harvard, a star at Harvard, and she is joining the organization as the director of player development. I believe that's correct. And it's another interesting hire. Adding a woman to the front office brings another perspective. And I'll read directly from Danny Ainge, because I think this is important. He says, Brad and I have talked a lot about this, and Mike Zarin and I have talked a lot about this. I believe that women bring a different perspective in any sort of business. If I had a board of 15 people, I'd probably want 14 women and me, joking, but at least 50-50, and Brad feels the same way, blah, blah, blah. He says, I think the biggest thing, I believe men and women are different, and they bring a different perspective. These two women that we brought in are very well educated and experienced in the world of basketball. I think they're going to bring a great perspective to our coaching staff and our entire organization. So, it is an important thing. And I think we can finally get past this idea that women are somehow unable to function in sports the same way men do. I think that's just such an antiquated thought, because especially these two pros. You've got Allison Feaster. They've already hired Kara Lawson. You've got professional basketball players who are on the floor facing the same defenses and facing the same offense, and you still have to stop people and you still have to score on people. And to see how to do that, whether you're a player and you want to become a coach, so you can say, hey, like Kara Lawson, when she worked with Carson Edwards a lot, say, I know the point guard position. Here's how you break a defense down. Here's how you run the pick and roll, so on and so forth. And then maybe Allison Feaster from, because she's in the player development side, player personnel side. Maybe she saw the game and said, oh, I'm interested in how the personnel affects the decision making. I'm just guessing. I'll have to talk to her about that. But point is, it doesn't matter if you're a woman or a guy in that situation. You just see things differently. Your ability to dunk a basketball doesn't mean that you can't function and see things and evaluate players. That doesn't make any sense. So, but what does make sense is the fact that women do see things differently, maybe from a coaching perspective. Not having the ability to rise up and dunk on somebody means you have to be more creative in your finishing, and you know little tricks that players might not have. So there are different ways to see the game a little bit differently. And if somebody can bring you a different perspective, you absolutely take it. You absolutely take it, because you don't know what you don't know. And if you don't know what you don't know and somebody else does, then great. That person can kind of fill you in. I've relayed this story a bunch, but when I was working in television in New York City, one of the great things about how we came across our stories and how we told our stories was my morning meeting, where my news director was a black man from the South, from Louisiana. The assistant news director was he was Persian, grew up in France. My executive producer was a Jewish woman who grew up in New York. And throughout the, you know, around the table, just different perspectives. And I can't recall specific instances, but like, I can tell you that many times you would pitch a story, I would pitch a story, and somebody would say, I don't know, what about this? And I never would have thought about whatever it is that they brought up. And vice versa, because we all have, like, I'm the son of Greek immigrants, so I see the world differently. I don't see it the same way as you who's driving or you at the gym. If you are from a different upbringing, just by virtue of me having to speak a different language with my parents and not having the same childhood as everybody, like, I didn't have a dad who grew up in the 60s and saw, like, the civil rights era. Like, my dad came over in the late 60s and was hanging around the Greeks. Like, it probably was after I was born in the mid 70s, before he really had a grasp of what was going on in the United States. He was in his own little bubble. So I didn't have that. I didn't have a parent to pass down musical tastes. I didn't have a parent that would sit there and be like, hey, listen to this, whatever, old rock and roll or this old jazz music. Like, man, this is what I used to listen to when I was a kid or whatever. Like, I had to figure a lot of this stuff out myself. So I have a different perspective than most of you. And that's great. Those different perspectives help us out a lot. So I'm excited to see what these two very qualified women bring to the Boston Celtics. It's going to be a very interesting kind of addition, and want to see what that impact is. Last thing I want to bring up, because Jaylen Brown, this conversation about Jaylen Brown and Danny Ainge, he was relaying the story about Jaylen Brown asking how last year's team compared to the 1986 team. I think we've talked about this a little bit, but Ainge kind of asked him, like, well, what do you think, when you're asked who's better, me, my team, or your team? Ainge, of course, is going to say my team. So then he says, quote, he started going over matchups like, well, I'm better than you, and Kyrie's close to Bird. And Ainge says, okay, let's just stop right there. First of all, Kyrie's not close to Bird. Like, Kyrie's a better ball handler than Larry Bird. Kyrie's a better ball handler than just about everybody, like, almost ever. But people have been slandering Larry Bird a lot lately on the internet, and I'm not here for it. And I don't think anybody who's been around for that era is here for it. Like, just stop. I think it's just an interesting kind of perspective that Jaylen Brown's like, well, I'm better than you. Kyrie's close to Bird. Like, oh, God. You guys are really, really feeling yourselves. But it's kind of an indication of how much they were feeling themselves last year. Not that I want to rehash that. I just thought it was a funny story. I'm going to stop because I've been talking long enough. By the time you hear this podcast, Team USA might be done with its game against Brazil. We'll see. I'm going to be, if you want to tune in, follow Locked On Live on Twitter. Obviously, if you follow me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John, I'll retweet out the link. But I and David Locke will be doing a post-game show right after that game. So you can tune into that. We're going to be broadcasting live on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, Twitch, like all at the same time. So whatever it is, whatever one of those things that you use, you can just follow us there. And there's going to be a post-game live post-game show there. It'll be on the Locked On NBA channel as well as a podcast later. So there will be that, as well as I will be here hopefully with one of the other two guys to kind of help break down that from a more of a Celtics perspective. So thanks for listening. Please subscribe. Please give us that 5-star rating and share the podcast with your friends. Tell them to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Rainy days.